This is Central Time. Now, reports of snowy owls are starting to pop up again in parts of Wisconsin. The first was about a month ago in Dane County. Since then, three more have been recorded in Bayfield, as well as Chippewa and Lincoln counties. The State Department of Natural Resources says a few others have been, quote, casually reported. The owls spend their summers in the Arctic Circle, then head to the northern U.S. for winter. Some years, like 2017, we get a whole bunch of them. It's not looking too likely this year, not so far anyway. But there's still a chance. You just have to know where they like to hang out, and it's a good way to promote social distancing. We want to hear about your snowy owl sightings this year or in the past at 800-642-1234. Paint us a picture of what it was like to see one. How long did you have to wait? What kind of environment was it in? What do you like about snowy owls? What questions do you have about them? Call in 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ryan Brady is a conservation biologist and the avian citizen science coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR. He's based in Ashland. Ryan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Well, sounds like they're few and far between so far this year, Ryan, but have you been lucky enough to see one yourself?
I have. Wow. I got to see one here near the Ashland area where I call home, and that was a week or two ago. And that was always a treat. They always are. The good news I have for folks, since those numbers that you led with, we've had additional sightings here in the last week or so. And so there's been about almost 20 sightings now across the state. And also interesting, they've come from all different parts of the state. So we've had some from Bayfield County all the way over towards the Lake Michigan shore near Sheboygan. We've had some near Oconto and in the center of the state near Buena Vista grasslands, and then even all the way down in the southwest, which doesn't always get them. We had a sighting with photographs in Grant County. So literally anywhere you go, you could possibly run into one.
Now give us a little snowy owl 101. These are big and cool-looking birds. Tell us a little more about them.
Yeah, as you might imagine, they're mostly white in color. A fair number of them that are barred with dark markings, so they might not look quite as white as you might think. The adult males are very pure white. They have rounded heads. They don't have ear tufts like great horned owls do and some of the other owls. They generally will be in open habitats, although, as some have probably noted, you can run into them just about anywhere. Sometimes you find one sitting in a tree in the woods in a very strange way. Sometimes they sit on roofs of houses, which they obviously are not familiar with, coming from the tundra. They weigh about 3 to 6 pounds. The males are smaller than the females. They are the heaviest of all the owls that we have in North America. And they're fairly closely related to the great horned owl. So those are a few things that viewers might note. But definitely they're going to take note of those, that white plumage and those bright yellow eyes, which are so captivating.
Talking about snowy owls with Ryan Brady from the State DNR. Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Joe is with us in Fond du Lac. Joe, hi.
Yes, hello. I'm glad I'm catching your show. For the last couple of weeks, my son has said there's a white owl at the Fond du Lac County Airport sitting on the runway markers, I guess. And my first thought was, well, it must be sick or hurt. You don't see owls out in the daytime. But since I did a little research and your guest is saying that they kind of like open areas and they're not, they're easily seen, I guess, even during the day.
Joe, thanks for that call. And yeah, I think of, just like Joe does, I think of owls as nocturnal. And you were touching on this, Ryan, not so much with the snowy owl.
Yes, very good point. There's two good points in the caller's comments there. One is, they are what we call diurnal, or active during the day. And not all of them are diurnal, and they're not necessarily active all day long, but some of them are, and that's what they're known for. So we encounter snowy owls more frequently than we do other owls, which we may only hear. Part of that is because they're from far north, where during the summers, when they're raising their young in the tundra in northern Canada, they are hunting all day long. There's no darkness, right? So they're familiar with that sort of approach. The other good point brought up was airports. And those vast expanses of airports are places that snowy owls do like to frequent because they mimic that open tundra that they call home the rest of the year. Now, that can lead to some problems, conflicts between owls and airplanes and other craft. And as such, we need to be careful about snowy owls in those places. And so there's this great project started up through the Northeast Wisconsin Audubon Society, right in the Fox Valley there, where they are working with falconers to capture snowy owls that may be causing problems by roosting near the runways and moving them to safer areas, safer for both the owls and for the people. So that's a great program. It's called Project SOAR, Snowy Owl Airport Rescue. Check it out if you can.
Project Runway was already taken, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now, Ryan, speaking of making sure we have good human snowy owl interactions, for people who want to see these, what is your advice and the DNR advice for looking at the snowy owls, but making sure we don't disturb them as they're going about their daily business?
Yeah, it's a little bit tricky, to be honest, because they are unfamiliar with people, so they can be somewhat tame and allow close approach. Yet at the same time, that's not necessarily a good thing for them, and it may be that they're actually sick or injured when you do that, so you're causing them additional stress. So you want to make sure that you want to stay back from the owls. You're too close if that bird is like really looking at you very often, or if it sits very erect and kind of opens its eyes very widely. And obviously, if it flies away, you were too close, and so don't go pursue it again and flush it again. You're going to make it use some really valuable energy. Smartphones play all kinds of bird calls these days, and we need to be really careful not to play owl calls at the snowy owl because that's just going to confuse it, or it might cause it to flush. So we want to avoid playing calls. We don't want to try and feed the owls or anything. And we maybe just give them their space, park your car, shut it off, stay in one place, and kind of watch the owl do its thing in a very natural sort of way.
We're talking about the return of snowy owls to Wisconsin with Ryan Brady. He's a conservation biologist and the avian citizen science coordinator for the state DNR. Coming up, we'll talk about why some years we have this eruption of snowy owls in the state. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen any snowy owls so far this season? How about ever? Are snowy owls on your must-see birding list? What questions do you have about them? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the return of snowy owls to Wisconsin with Ryan Brady, conservation biologist and the avian citizen science coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR. You can join in if you have a sighting to report yourself or a story maybe from years past. 800-642-1234 is the number. Let's go back to our callers now. Dave is with us in Marshfield. Dave, hello.
Hi, how you doing? Yeah,
good.
I just
wanted
to say that. Oh, well, I was just traveling westbound down Highway 10 in Portage County by Stevens Point, and I saw ahead on a road sign, I saw this big white bird, and as I got close, I noticed it was an owl. And I had to slow down and look actually two or three times to make sure I saw what I saw. But yeah, the traffic wasn't bothering him or anything, but and it was a wide open area alongside the road and farmland. So I think he was just scoping out, looking for his next meal.
Dave, thanks a lot for sharing that and that double and triple take, it sounds like. Ryan, when people see snowy owls, does the DNR want to hear about it?
Yes, we do, as we do with most birds, to be honest. Snowy owls don't have any special status. They're not endangered or threatened at a state level, but they're a species of high interest, and they are declining on a national and continental level and even a global level. So we would like to collect as much data as we can, and in part because they're highly visible, people see them, and also because it's very simple to report them. If you just go to ebird.org, that's ebird.org, takes a minute or two to set up an account the first time, and then you just take a couple minutes to say, here's what date it was, here where I saw the owl, and then maybe put a picture in if you want, or how many you saw, and then that logs it into the system. And from that, with snowy owls and all birds, we can begin to really track their movement patterns, both spatially and temporally.
And that's something you're looking for people to do year-round, right, with this citizen science way to help track which birds are where in the state?
Yes, it's a very powerful tool that most folks find it quite simple to use. And so maybe there's a little bit of a learning curve in the beginning, but we have thousands of people entering data into eBird every year. And not just Wisconsin. This is happening not only even in other states, but in other countries all around the world. So we're able to really aggregate that data at a scale that you cannot get in any other way. And so because birding is so popular and owls are popular in this case, it's a pretty great tool for seeing how bird populations are moving around and maybe how they're shifting over time.
Thanks again for that call. Ryan, I want to spend a few minutes talking about snowy owl migration. Usually when we think of migratory birds, they are leaving Wisconsin in the wintertime, or human snowbirds are headed down to Florida or Arizona. These birds come to Wisconsin and similar places for the winter. How unusual is that?
Well, this is the snowy owl's version of the tropics, right? They're well equipped, many, many feathers, feathered legs, all large body size, all kinds of adaptations that will allow them to handle cold weather. So this is really nothing for them. And believe it or not, some of them winter way in up in northern Canada and in conditions much, much harsher than here. So it's not weather that is a problem for them. Generally, what's driving their movement is the availability of food. And so if there's not much many small rodents available in northern Canada, they might start to come down. Or if there's a lot of small rodents up in Canada, that might allow them to raise a lot of young owls. And then all those young owls from the summer begin to disperse out and move southward, and then that might bring them down here. So a lot of their movements are not driven by weather, although snow depth can really impact whether they can access that food. For the most part, it is food availability, and they're going to settle in where there is good food available, things like small rodents, things like rabbits, or along the coast. A lot of them eat ducks, or in cities, pigeons, things like that.
And let's talk about the variability here in Wisconsin. Some years they're few and far between the snowy owls. Sometimes there are lots of them. Can you talk about the snowy owl eruption years? That's IRR-uption. What's going on?
Yes, we're
there?
Not erupting like a volcano. This is a different type of eruption. This is IRR, eruption. And all that means is kind of a temporary mass movement. And so we get snowy owls in some numbers every single year. But some years you have, like I said, this big prey boom up in the north, and these snowy owls can raise 7, 8, or 9 young, and they all disperse kind of, not all of them, but a lot of them disperse southward, and that'll bring us some big numbers. So the last 2 years have been kind of quiet. We've only documented maybe upwards towards 100 snowy owls in the state for the winter, but 2017, I think you mentioned, was our last big year. We were in the high 200s. We had a few slow years before that where we only had 50 to maybe 150. And then in 2013-14, we had two really big years back-to-back that were very similar to 2017. So usually it's thought to be a cycle, maybe every 3, 4, or 5 years that you get these eruptions. But what we're finding over the last decade is that we've had maybe 4 or 5 of these just in about 10 years. So what does that all mean? It's probably not enough time to really know, but it's something to keep an eye on. Will these cycles kind of change over time?
Ryan, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
Ryan Brady is conservation biologist and the avian citizen science coordinator at the Wisconsin DNR. We talked to him today about the return of snowy owls to the state and what to look out for. Coming up, President Trump plans to make changes to immigration laws, environmental protections, and other areas before he leaves office. We'll find out what's in store for the lame duck period. You're listening to Set Time. I'm Rob Ferret. President Trump will leave office in just under 7 weeks, but that doesn't mean his administration is slowing down during the lame duck period. It's planning to change rules on everything from environmental protections and capital punishment to labor laws and immigration. While time is running short to put all the proposed changes into effect, those that do become official could tie the hands of President-elect Joe Biden. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there something you want to see the Trump administration do before it leaves office? Are there changes you're worried the president is going to make or try to make? In general, do you think the lame duck period should be action-packed or a time for a president to back off? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Isaac Arnsdorf is a reporter covering national politics for ProPublica. He and his colleagues are tracking what the administration has been working on since the election. Isaac, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, how common is it for an outgoing administration to try to do a lot of these, you know, administrative rule kinds of changes before they run out of time in mid to late January?
There's definitely a long history of this. And, you know, in some ways, it's kind of just human nature to have a crunch time right before a deadline, like the end of an administration. But there's definitely a concern when you see this happening when the White House is about to change parties, and it's happening in this period, the lame duck period, after an election, when a majority of the country voted to vote to go in a different direction, and the changes that the outgoing administration is making now are going to have the effect of sort of tying the hands of the next president in terms of what he's going to be able to do to achieve his policy objectives.
Before we get into specific changes in the works here, Isaac, I understand from your reporting that the timelines for these kind of things, the time it usually takes to make these kind of changes, the timeline is being accelerated. What's happening?
Yeah, exactly. So that's the other big concern, is that just when there's a rush like this, that things are going to get sloppy and that you might not be getting the best policies when you're kind of shortchanging the thorough deliberative process this way. So a clear example of that is, you know, usually this takes like 2 years to finalize a regulation. And in some cases, what we're seeing are rules that have been chugging along for a really long time and are just getting finished up now. But we're also seeing these rules that are just starting out on a much faster turnaround. And part of how they're doing that is by having less time for the public to weigh in and comment. So they'll only have 30 days instead of the 60 days that they usually provide. And another thing that they're doing is the time that they're allowing for the White House to review these regulations and send them back to the agencies has gotten much quicker. So that raises this concern of whether these regulations are really getting thoroughly scrutinized and vetted and are producing good policies if they're being so rushed and kind of cutting these corners.
And I guess one response might be, well, so what? They put these into place, a Biden administration comes in, they can just flip the switch and turn them back off. Is it that simple?
No, it doesn't really work that way. So if the rule doesn't get finalized, then yes, it's pretty easy for the new administration to back off from it. But if it does get over the finish line, then then that's a law on the books and or it's legally binding. And what the next administration would have to do to have a few options. So one is they would have to start that whole long process that I just talked about. They'd have to start that all over, build a new record, accept public comments, review it at the White House, consult all the other agencies. So that would take a number of years and a whole lot of time and resources when the agency couldn't be working on other things. The other possibility is the rule could get challenged in court, and that is very common. A lot of regulations by the Trump administration have been challenged and even blocked in court. And so that would create a way where the new administration could say, well, actually, you know, we're fine with that. We're not going to appeal that decision, and we're going to allow that to be the way that these rules get cut down. And the final way is something called the Congressional Review Act, which is a fast-track mechanism where a simple majority in both houses of Congress can repeal a recent regulation. And the congressional Republicans used this more than a dozen times to strike down more than a dozen midnight regulations from the Obama administration in 2017. But whether that's going to be an option for Democrats to deal with these Trump administration regulations this time around is probably going to depend on what happens in the two Georgia Senate runoffs, or if they can get a few Republican defectors to give them a simple majority in the Senate.
Talking to Isaac Arensdorf from ProPublica about reporting he and his colleagues are doing, looking at the Trump administration, the lame duck period, and last minute rules changes. Let's get into some specific changes in the works, Isaac. One, you mentioned that some have been in the works for longer. Here's one of those, the USDA changing rules on the chicken processing industry. What is in the works there?
So this one's kind of interesting because the USDA considered doing this before, way back in 2012. And what this would do is increase the speed limit in a chicken factory, basically. So the industry wants that because it naturally allows them to make more chicken and make more money. But it poses pretty significant risks to to injuries for the people who work in the plants. And there are also some concerns, and the evidence is kind of mixed on this, but there are definitely concerns that it can make it harder for inspectors to keep an eye on the chicken to make sure that that disease and germs don't get through. And so back the previous time that the USDA considered this, they ended up not doing it for that reason, because of those concerns. And that was during the Obama administration. So when the Trump administration came in, the USDA said, well, okay, we didn't raise the speed limit, but we're going to start issuing waivers. So basically, on a case-by-case basis, if a factory asks us nicely, we'll tell them, yeah, sure, you can raise the speed limit at your facility. And then over time, they are now coming back and saying, well, now that we've sort of piloted it in a number of places, we think that we can increase the rule across the board. And this is something that's just a proposal. It's actually not even a proposal. It just went to the White House for review. So the draft isn't even public. And ordinarily, it would take years for something like this to be finalized, but there's a lot of concerns among safety advocates who are worried about the impact of this, that the administration is going to try to finish this up in just the next couple months.
Another issue that could be affected here, immigration from before his election. What kind of changes could be in the works when it comes to immigration in the U.S.?
Basically, everything that they can do to restrict immigration, they are doing. They are trying to reduce high-skilled visas that are very common in the technology industry, for example. They're trying to make it much harder to claim asylum. And a lot of these are policies that the Trump administration has been following for a while, but by formalizing them in a regulation, they're going to hold them over into the Biden administration. They're going to make it so Biden can't just flip a switch to undo them. They're going to have to go through a new rulemaking process.
I want to check out a couple more issues out there. Air pollution regulations could also change. What are you tracking there?
Yeah, so there are a number of really big rules that the EPA has been working on for years. And these are good examples of ones that if the EPA finishes them, which basically everyone expects that they will make a priority out of doing, those are not going to be able to be reversed anytime soon. And part of that is because the studies, the research that go into creating these standards, for example, on ozone or smog, it takes 5 years to gather that data. So there's just no way that you can turn around and change that right away. And another rule that's very controversial is known to its proponents as a transparency rule. And those who don't like it call it the secret science or the censored science rule. And what that does is requires that if the EPA is going to use research to justify restrictions on pollution, then the research has to disclose raw data. And the industry and the administration say, well, that's only fair that everyone gets to look under the hood. The problem is that the best research, the best evidence for the cost of pollution is medical. And that's usually based on anonymized data that has to be anonymized because of patient privacy. So the effect is really just excluding basically all epidemiological research and making it much, much harder to justify any new restrictions on pollution in the future.
And finally, a capital punishment, you write, there could be changes in the works for how federal capital punishment is undertaken. What is the Trump administration looking at?
So the Trump administration has resumed federal executions this year for the first time since 2003, and they've scheduled several more that are supposed to occur before Inauguration Day, which is significant because President-elect Biden opposes the death penalty and has said that there won't be any executions in his administration. And so there's a new regulation that was just finalized to go along with this that basically kind of patches over a bunch of procedural issues that that litigants had challenged in trying to stop these executions. And so basically trying to give the Justice Department a lot more leeway so that it doesn't get held up in executing these people before Inauguration Day.
And Isaac, anything else you're watching for in this lame duck period that you want to highlight?
There are so many. We're coming up we're finding new ones every day. Like there was one I just saw today that had to do with how the Social Security Administration would evaluate disability benefits for like amputations and spine injuries, and basically making it take longer or harder for people to qualify for those. And there was another change just today at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau basically gives companies an opportunity to ask for an advisory opinion from the regulator. And consumer advocates are concerned that basically gives companies an avenue to get kind of favorable guidance without any opportunity for the public to weigh in on it.
Isaac, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Isaac Arensdorf is a reporter covering national politics for ProPublica. He talked with us today about what the Trump administration is working on during its final weeks in office. You can find a link to the work he and his colleagues are doing to track that at wpr.org/centraltime.